I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccans. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Weirdly enough, this episode is very baseball-centric at the beginning. But look, if you don't love baseball, if you're not a baseball nut like our pal Max Williams, never fear. Don't let that dissuade you. Because fellow conspiracy realists, you may recall in an earlier part of our weekly Strange News segment, Matt, you brought a pretty disturbing story about some revelations related to baseball and long-term health consequences.
Well, it's some possibilities, right? There's no... We came away from that episode with the understanding that there is no proof that there's a link between what we're going to talk about today and that specific type of brain cancer. But...
Right.
It ain't good. Right.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah, it's like playing Clue, you know, in the board game Clue, where you have to have three cards so you can name the person, the weapon, and the place. There are about two cards in here, I would say. Two and a half. And that's just being diplomatic.
Two toes down, perhaps.
Yeah.
Not 10 toes. Yeah,
but what we found in the research, like the full research for this episode, is that it goes way beyond baseball.
Yes, the implications are far past the stadium. Here are the facts. First, AstroTurf, it's a cool name. It sounds vaguely space-related, but what is this stuff? It might be interesting for a lot of us listening today to learn that AstroTurf is a brand name. It is one example of a thing that exists under multiple manufacturers, right? AstroTurf's actually a proprietary eponym. We're talking about this a little bit off air. We were naming a couple. Paul shouted out Popsicle from our brain stuff days. And what is a proprietary eponym?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, it's a brand, essentially. It's the name of a product that ends up being so ubiquitously known that it kind of becomes the stand-in for all other, you know, sort of, I guess you could call them imitators, but it really does become sort of a case of parallel thinking where the product is so ubiquitous that probably it was almost invented simultaneously by multiple parties, but the one with the name that stuck is the one that kind of, you know, became the one. And then everyone else just sort of refers to the other ones by that same name, like Xerox, for example, which is just, you know, photocopying. But it is, people will just say, run a Xerox of this. Or even
Googling it.
Yeah, Google it. Or Coke in some places just refers to a carbonated drink, you know.
I need a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great example.
I hold my fingy.
I will share one example, an old war story that Matt and Noel, you guys have already heard. I first ran into proprietary eponyms while working on a show called Stuff of Genius, a kid's show about inventors.
I worked on that too.
That's right. I forgot. Gosh, how many shows have we worked on together, Matt?
A lot.
A lot. So Matt was doing the hard work on Stuff of Genius. I was also there. And Tyler Klang. Yes, Tyler Klang, a good friend of the show, who actually, he's kind of a Jerry. He doesn't appear on air that often. But yeah, so I first at least learned about proprietary eponyms when I learned that the makers of Frisbee are pretty litigious, a lot less fun, a lot less fun than maybe the image would imply. If it is not a Frisbee brand Frisbee, it can only be called a flying disc, and they will find you. So AstroTurf then is the most popular example, the street name for a product, a kind of product, a genre of product that exists all over the Western world. It's weird because when you get in the origin story of inventions, it can be kind of tough to suss out who made what, because to your point, Noel, there's so much parallel thinking that can occur. Good inventors identify a problem and then try to reverse engineer, right? Work back from the problem toward the solution. So it shouldn't surprise us that there are a couple of foggy parts about the AstroTurf or synthetic turf origin story, but we do know it was not originally named AstroTurf.
No, it was called Chemgrass. Way better. Grass. Yum. That just sounds great.
Give me
I want to frolic on some Chemgrass. Sounds good to me.
That was their original motto too, right, Matt? Chemgrass. Yum.
Yeah, I think so.
So we got these. One story goes, there are these two dudes, James M. Feria and Robert T. Wright. They worked out of a place called Chemstrand, Chemgrass. Get it?
It has to do with synthetic fibers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because creating synthetic fibers became a big deal back in the 60s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Did so much for workouts. And synthetic fibers still play a big role, I guess, in gym-based internet selfies, right?
Way more things than you could possibly imagine. There are synthetic types of fibers that end up in those products.
And they're tremendously useful and versatile. The issue is that they're also, in the grand scheme of things, a very new kind of endeavor for humans. Chemstrand may be recognizable to some people. I don't know who. You're very plugged in if you already knew this, because we didn't. Chemstrand was a subsidiary of Monsanto, who is back. Monsanto rides again in stuff they don't want you to know. And they first put this stuff in a school in Rhode Island back in the 60s. That was like their test field.
In 1964. Yeah. And
schools, the ultimate chem testing fields.
Yeah. But then in 1966, that's when it ended up in Texas, why we know it as AstroTurf.
Yeah, and what a shout out, David Cheney, who is also often mentioned as the inventor of AstroTurf. Some other manufacturers cite him. There's a Sports Illustrated article about him. They say that he's the guy responsible for creating this stuff. The way they put it is responsible for indoor Major League Baseball, millions of welcome mats. Origin story aside, Matt, you're absolutely right. The big moment, the real debut, comes in Houston, Texas, 1966, at the Astrodome. The Astrodome at the time is cutting edge. It's like the beginning of that Simpsons monorail episode. everybody wants to have an Astrodome. It's an indoor stadium. You know what I mean? Finally, humanity has conquered the gods of weather and said, we don't care what the environment's like. We're going to play till the ninth inning.
Well, it's human engineering. It's beautiful human engineering at work, right? We need a way to have these baseball games, like maybe in a pure way. It's pure baseball, right? You don't got to worry about getting rained out. You don't got to worry about super crazy hot days when you're out there playing on the field. Let's do it indoors. So like they solved a ton of problems by putting a dome on top of the stadium, but then it created more problems.
Yeah, like these things often do.
You know? Well, and one of the major problems was they, in order to light that stadium, right, like correctly, to get enough light inside that dome, you had to have crazy strong lights on the dome all over it.
Yeah, and then they actually had to step some of that back and paint some of the ceiling lighting area because the lights were too bright for the players to see the balls coming down. And
imagine the sun is one point of light in the sky, right? And it may not be directly above you while you're playing. Sometimes it is, but even then it's one point of light. Now you've got like dozens.
Now you're in the spotlight no matter where you look. And they also had a problem with the grass. This thing that I love that you point out the architecture reminds me of my favorite architecture quote, which is, I can't remember who said it, but someone once described architecture as frozen poetry.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I think that's really beautiful way to think about it. And things like the stadium, these massive marvels of human engineering, they really are, there is poetry to them, but there's also a really tough landscaping situation. which is nuts, but it makes sense because they had such a hard time keeping the grass growing in this enormous indoor cutting edge stadium that by the second half of the 1965 baseball season, they said, it, we're just going to have to paint the dead grass green because we can't grow it. And of course, if you have ever played baseball, you know the grass, the field itself, is a big part of how you play the game.
It's made of dreams, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And chemicals.
Yeah. So they tried a new option. They tried several different types of grass. None of it would take. So they resurfaced the field with ChemGrass from your friends at ChemStrand, the subsidiary of Monsanto.
Globochem, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, which itself is probably a subsidiary of Illumination Global Unlimited. There are a lot of questions still out there, right? So what was ChemGrass?
Well, ChemGrass is essentially a carpet of fake grass. You can transport it in like these rolls, you know. So essentially, it is a carpet of half-inch thermoplastic fibers that's attached to a rubber mat and then laid on top of a base. In this case, it would be an asphalt base. ChemStrand was smart, you know, in their branding play here when they thought of this as an opportunity to rename it based on this new use, because you know we have the team obviously that named the Astros and the stadium and all of that, but also Astro just has that kind of thing of the future vibe, right? So they renamed the stuff from the maybe more accurate and possibly ill-advised name ChemGrass to AstroTurf.
Get it?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Well, yeah. Well, it makes a ton of sense from a branding perspective, right? Oh, from a marketing perspective, from a company that's like, oh, this is kind of working, guys. I think we could probably do this again, like a lot.
Let's create an association with a pre-existing beloved brand. Well,
no,
right?
But guys, this is a moment in like history.
History.
In
no news, question.
So in the news, this thing, people are talking about this in the New York Times. Oh, wow. Brand new turf going in. It's a stuff of the future, everyone. Look at this.
AstroTurf. Mm-hmm.
Which is also, I think, was it stuff from the future? We had another show.
Yeah.
Paul worked on Stuff of Genius. I don't know if you guys remember.
He was the video editor.
Did I get some reputation for not acknowledging people's work?
No, I just totally forgot.
Okay. Well, shout out to Paul. Paul is an absolute mastermind. And Paul's parents, many people's parents in the show today, as well as some of our fellow conspiracy realists listening now, may have been alive when this news hit. And it was nationwide. It was syndicated. It was a big deal. It was very Jetsons. It was very futuristic. Also, it's a way better name than Chemgrass. You know, what were their other mottos? Their first one was Yum, and then their second one was Chemgrass, a toupee for the ground. Like, they needed the help with that, and AstroTurf was there. It also looked like it solved so many problems. You're a stadium owner, and you say, okay, there's an upfront cost here, but over X amount of years, I won't have to pay for near as much maintenance, right? So this is a long-term investment for me, and I want my stadium to stay around as long as possible. So it becomes incredibly common in indoor and outdoor stadiums all through the 70s. It goes beyond the borders of the U.S. It's in Canada. It's in Toronto. And
Major League Baseball really, really bought into the stuff. There were a ton of brand new stadiums that were built with this turf, artificial turf laid down there. And it was, again, touted as, oh, man, this is a great new thing we got.
This is how the pros play, right? And as of 2023, there are more than 12,000 artificial turf playing fields of some sort in the United States. And according to a trade group that we'll get into a little bit later called the Synthetic Turf Council, more than 1,200 or so are installed every year in recent years, definitely in 2013, and the pattern seems to have continued up until at least the pandemic. The idea for AstroTurf comes from a place called the Educational Facilities Laboratory, a nonprofit, and they said, we want to help people learn. We want to create and foster environments that set kids up for success. And they found a really interesting study that showed if you're a military recruit in the 50s and you come from a rural area, you will tend to be more physically fit than recruits from urban areas, from big cities. And this is back before the majority of humans lived in big cities. So it was a little easier to study this. This caused someone to urge Monsanto to create a grass-like surface that you could lay down in city lots so kids have more places to play. And you can see stuff like this in playgrounds all across big cities, right? Like if you've ever walked around New York, then you will see that kind of green patch with the playground equipment. And it's not real grass, right? But it might be grass-like. That's what they were aiming for. They thought it was the best thing. It's the turf of the future. A lot of actual baseball players, because remember this started in Major League Baseball, they didn't dig it. They were concerned.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems is when you're playing baseball, often you dive for things. You know, a lot of that is when you're sliding, you know, if you're running around the bases, doing stuff like that. But if you're in the outfield, you know that you're going to be diving for balls every once in a while. And when you do something like that and your arm, like your, let's say your elbow scratches along the grass or something on the ground, you're going to get cut up a little bit, right? It may not be crazy bad, but you may get cut up a little bit, a little bruising. But if you're on this artificial turf, the baseball players started noticing that they were getting what was akin to rug burn, like really, really bad rug burn anytime they would dive for anything.
Well, I also have to ask, I mean, you know, any league play type, you know, sport where you ultimately are like playing to get into playoffs and then some sort of championship, you know, isn't consistency important, like in terms of like the venues where you play? And couldn't having AstroTurf on some stadiums and not others be considered either just kind of like skewing the figures a little bit?
Yeah, that could be a concern. And, you know, every stadium seat umpire would raise that and other variables to explain the outcome of a game, especially if their team lost. Sorry, folks. Mm-hmm. But the issue for the players was not just the rashes, the rug burn, the skids that these ball players are encountering. It's the fact that they never healed. At least that's what we heard from folks like former Astros outfielder Bob Watson. Turns out Bob may have been pretty prescient. This stuff was spreading to football stadiums as well. By 1984, 17 out of 28 NFL teams were playing on artificial turf. And to your point, Noel, about the importance of having a uniform field of play wherever you go, there's a pretty good argument you can make at this time where you say, okay, now we're equalizing things. We need to make this turf ubiquitous. It needs to be the standard.
Very convenient for the Globochems of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of a pain in the butt for Major League Baseball and anyone that's responsible for retrofitting all of these stadiums.
I'm picturing the AstroTurf folks making handshake deals and leaning in and saying Chemgrass, the way that people said Hail Hydra
exactly
in those Marvel movies.
And yeah. y'all, not to act like I'm, oh, poor Major League Baseball. But I mean, you know, anytime you have like a sea change like this, where a new anything comes up and it becomes sort of the order of the day. So there are people who have to kind of kick into gear and figure out how to make the change without disrupting their season.
Well, yeah, but guys, I think the biggest thing here is what you're talking about, the handshake deal whispering in about Chemgrass there, because we learned pretty recently, gosh, I guess it was a while ago now, but when the Braves got a new stadium in a different part of Atlanta, you guys remember this, or I guess not even really Atlanta, Cobb County, and just how huge of a deal, how much money was to be made when a new stadium was being built. And in this time, just before AstroTurf starts making its way into other major leagues, there are a ton of brand new fields that are constructed with specifically Chemgrass as one of the major selling points.
Right. Yeah. Now it's a feature. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're buying a car, you could pony up a little extra and get the airbags or the power mm-hmm. steering, etc.
Yeah, the seatbelt.
Mm-hmm. and so on. Yes. If seatbelts gave you cancer.
Or,
so,
hey, the tires. You can get the tires.
There we go. Oh, God. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Ugh. I was annoyed to find when I bought my certified pre-owned Honda Fit that it did not come with floor mats.
I had to
buy those later.
What? Yeah. What are you, a billionaire? You're out buying cars with floor mats?
It's crazy.
Monsa Musa over here. I've been going through a thing where I reference Monsa Musa. I don't know
who Monsa Musa is, but I imagine it's a bigwig of some
for
stripe.
A long time, the most wealthy dude in history went on a tour on the African continent back in the day and broke the economies of every place he went to just because he rolled with that much gold. Maybe a ridiculous history episode.
Yeah, man. Floor mats equals Monsa Musa.
Yeah. All these fancy, these floor mat tycoons. Also, artificial turf floor mats. Probably don't buy them. You'll see why. but that is weird. Just to stay on that for a second, though. Like, they... No floor mats?
What they else? Didn't tell me either. I got the car, and then I looked in there, and there was just, like, paper on the floor, and there was no floor mats, and I called them. And the guy acted like I was asking the most ridiculous question in the room. He's like, what are you, floor mats?
What are you, Monsa
Musa? With the car? Yeah, he said that, actually. And then I just ended up buying some kind of aftermarket ones or whatever. Like, floor mats aren't, like, crazy expensive. I'm sorry, the end of rant. They're not crazy expensive. You'd think that would be stock.
I do a double system. I get the kind of the shell floor mat and then the fabric one on top of that. It's just easier to clean. Ask no one. So anyhow, the we'll talk about layers in a minute. That's kind of a segue. Anyway, so the NFL players also share the concerns of the baseball players when it comes to AstroTurf. They say the surface is harder. We're getting more strains. We're getting more abrasions than we did playing just on natural grass. And they also, this is interesting, I didn't see a ton of this popping up a lot. I don't know if you guys saw it, but there were complaints that abrasions from artificial turf also led to staph infections.
Yeah, I remember reading that in the Science History Institute article you shared, Ben. That, yeah, I think that's a common thing. Like, because they don't heal very quickly for one reason or another, the infection can set in.
Yeah, and it already feels a little creepy too, right? That the idea that abrading your skin on this surface will take longer to heal than if it were abraded on grass. It's just weird. This didn't faze the AstroTurf crew, nor the other manufacturers entering the market.
They're making millions of dollars.
Millions. Acres. Acres of turf. And they were doing this by expanding past the major leagues, past the NFL. They were going to minor leagues. They were going to college, even high school teams, right? And with great success, because they had this beautiful marketing. You know, play like the big boys, essentially.
Yeah. Well, and, think about, yeah, again, we talked about this before, but the number of Major League Baseball stadiums in this country is very tiny. The number, yes, of NFL teams, like 28 or something, I don't even know, 30. That's just, you can make your money that many times if you stay there in the big time. But if you move out to the small time, every county in the country has multiple high schools, right?
Oh, yeah. And if not to mention like farm teams and stuff too, mm-hmm, you know, or like, you know, minor league and all of that.
Right. Minor leagues are a big thing. The cool thing about this business model too, if we're being just a bit soulless, is that if everything goes right, they're going to keep building more schools. Yeah. And what do those schools need? They need more places to play. So ka-ching. But players are complaining. And over time, baseball stadiums, we know the major ones, start converting back to natural surfaces. New varieties and strains of grass come out, and this enables, you know, this enables more hardy plant matter. And if you go to the 1990s, you'll see that the synthetic turf manufacturers introduce what they call a new generation of turf, a new and improved formula. And they say this will be safer, softer, more comfortable.
And we'll tell you all about what those changes were and what they meant for everybody's health right after a word from our sponsors.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So we sort of teased before the break that there was a change in this synthetic turf that supposedly would create a safer and more comfortable playing surface. This is in the 90s. So what kind of changes are we talking about? Obviously, the goal here is to imitate grass as much as possible, you know, in terms of the feel and the length of the fibers or the material or whatever. But we know, as we mentioned earlier, that this was causing some kind of nasty injuries. You know, when folks were skidding around, they were basically getting like turf rash. So in order to mitigate that, I think, if I'm not mistaken, guys, the idea was to lengthen these grass fibers a bit that could perhaps cause a little more cushioning, create a little bit more of a soft landing.
Well, yeah, they'll bend a little more when your elbows and knees and everything land on them.
Yeah, and they also... One of the big improvements was what's called the infill. You can get a good picture of this if you go to the Synthetic Turf Council. But of course, be aware that they have a horse in the race, right? They have a team they're rooting for.
We're going to get to them. Because we went hard on their website, looked at all the companies. Oh, man.
Yeah. Get ready for that one. What you need to know now is that the infill, the stuff that provides a lot of this cushioning, when they came out with these improvements, it consisted of something called crumb rubber, like cake crumb with a B, rubber from used tires specifically that gets ground up into particles that are usually about just 1 millimeter across, and then they get mixed up with sand. And this was, at the time, a very cool solution to another problem. People had piles and piles and piles of tires, and they didn't know what to do with them. You know what I mean? They knew they wouldn't decompose very easily, and they were in open air dumps. They became condos for rats and vermin, mosquitoes, roaches. And if the weather conditions were right or wrong, then these piles of tires would catch on fire.
I love this episode, guys, because it really is human ingenuity and engineering at play, all intertwining. Just the idea of how important tires are to the growth of the United States of America, right? And Ben, I know you know a ton about that with car stuff, but like just how important building, creating something that could get all of the cars around on these brand new interstates we had built at one time.
Henry Ford even built his own town, right?
Exactly.
Out in Brazil, just to make tires. In a burst of humility, he called it Fordlandia.
Well, yeah, but then at some point, those tires go bad. And there are, you know, some companies who specialize in getting a tire back ready to go on the road. But mostly, those tires end up in a landfill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those dumps are also there, you know, they're not completely cut off from the environment, obviously. So rainwater falls on these tires, and that helps chemicals from the tires leach into the ground. Everybody's saying these tires are a problem. So if you are an inventor and you come forward and you say, hey, I've got a great way to use these, you know, you can forget about the rat condos and those constant tire fires. Well, let's play baseball. Then it sounds like a win-win, right?
Yeah. The mosquitoes for me. It's really the mosquitoes.
It's the mosquitoes for you. And yeah. just taking, like, think about how many tires they're using, too. One industry estimate we saw said that covering a NFL regulation football field with synthetic turf uses the equivalent of 20,000 to 40,000 tires, which is a great way to clean your landfill.
And I mean, that's awesome, but I never saw the statistics for the number of tires, scrap tires that end up in landfills every year. I know it's a ton, yeah. right? It's a problem.
Right.
But yeah. 20 to 40,000, that's definitely making a dent. But is it just a dent?
When you get new tires, you know, and oftentimes the auto shop or whatever, they'll for a fee dispose of your tires for you. It's sort of more of an out of sight, out of mind convenience, but it isn't really like they're just vanishing these tires in a puff of smoke. I mean, they're just going to one of these same places, right?
Well, they'll yeah. just ship them to another country sometimes.
Probably.
Exactly. Yeah. And they'll just, it's a, like a NIMBY fee you pay quite literally so that those tires are not in your backyard. The tire manufacturers, here's the tricky part. Tires are definitely not garden variety rubber like you would get from a plant source. They contain a lot of chemicals that make them reliable on the road. Stuff like, ooh, here we go, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. That makes it stronger, makes it more durable. But then they also treat it with zinc oxide. Zinc oxide can have lead. It can have cadmium, which is also bad. This stuff makes the tire more elastic. It makes it last longer, but the entire time it is emitting those chemicals or things generated by those substances. So in 2009, the EPA says, all right, we've heard the people, we're gonna check out synthetic turf in these sports fields. And by this point, in the 2000s, it's on playgrounds too. And we're going to see if any of these particulates, any of these weird metals or chemicals or what are called volatile organic compounds, AKA new car smell stuff, we're going to see if that is dangerous to the people playing there. And surprise, the EPA said, nah, all good.
Yeah, of course they did. I don't want to glide over this fact too much. It is, these turfs are being used in playgrounds, in playgrounds at schools, in playgrounds in public parks, all kinds of places. And, you know, if there's potentially a problem, we got a serious problem, because it's not only affecting professional, you know, baseball players, football players, high school football players and baseball players and soccer players. It's affecting little kids who are just out there innocently playing on a playground.
And you could argue all the people involved are innocent. No
baseball player, no major league baseball player is innocent. I'm just joking. No, but I guess what I mean from a public concern standpoint,
right?
That ups the ante when kids are now involved.
Understood. Yeah, and agreed. And today, only 5 professional baseball teams still use synthetic fields. But just because the thing's gone doesn't mean the effects or consequences of it have vanished. Just last month, as we record, a report came out via the Philadelphia Inquirer alleging that 6 former Philadelphia Phillies may have died from exposure to this stuff. Here's where it gets crazy. It appears to be true. Again, we were very careful in the beginning to say, like, we don't have all of the clue pieces, right? We know a place, we know a possible weapon, we know a possible victim or perpetrator, but we don't have it all connected yet. We're still like a card short.
Know a place. Yeah. Where glioblastoma exists. Sorry. Oh, God.
Nailed it. What? Oh, okay. Wait. Yeah. Let's talk about that. What's the scoop? What did Philly tell us?
So the Philadelphia Inquirer reported that these 6 athletes, all of whom, we talked about this in the Strange News segment, died from a very rare brain cancer called glioblastoma, had played most of their careers with the Phillies, which is a team that competed on artificial turf in Veterans Stadium for decades. A former EPA scientist named Kyla Bennett, who is now with the Public Employees of Environmental Responsibility nonprofit, had this to say about the whole situation. There is a high number of Philadelphia Phillies diagnosed with this rare cancer, and it looks weird. So that should be a red flag. We don't know what those chemicals are doing to us. What happened to exercising caution when we're talking about human health? This is a very good question, you know? I mean, and something that we've talked about many times where something like, for example, asbestos, you know, at one time it was promoted as being this magical future material that was, you know, going to be everything should be built out of this stuff. And then, of course, they are off to the races, installing it and everywhere from schools to hospitals, you know, you name it, only to find through subsequent research and advances in technology and, you know, analysis that this stuff is just deadly. I mean, it does seem like we are very, you know, hot for the next new thing and the next new whatever that thing might be. Sometimes to the point of, you know, hedging our bets and saying, oh, it's fine. We've done our due diligence. But then that due diligence changes and the scope of it changes over time as new methods become available for checking into this stuff. Not to mention when you start to see red flags like these cases we're seeing here.
Well, and remember, the connection between the artificial turf and those rare cancers at this point, when we're, you know, when it's being looked into, even then, when the Philadelphia Inquirer is talking about it and writing about it, it is just a connection, right? It's like, oh, here's one commonality between these six baseball players that got this rare cancer. But that's apparently not when the concern began when it comes to baseball players being affected potentially by that artificial turf.
Yeah, yeah. And for her part, too, Kyla Bennett is a subject matter expert and is not doing some kind of polemical, like, hot take. Genuinely saying, it looks weird. It should be a red flag.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty understandable, right? And like you were saying, Matt, this is... I don't know about you guys. I was surprised to find that concerns date back so far. It goes beyond players saying, like, hey, I don't care for this from my personal experience. In 2017, New York Times published an article about this very thing. And Matt, you want to hit them with a headline?
Yeah, sure. The New York Times says, the brain cancer that keeps killing baseball players.
Oof. Not pulling a lot of punches there.
Yeah.
In the Big Apple. Okay.
Well, this really is rare. Well, you know, it's rare to be an MLB player. Well, yeah, you know, this brain cancer is really rare, though.
I like that you're adding that layer, too, because now we're seeing an increased selection, right? So we should note that in these studies and reports, all the stuff we found, multiple experts on brain cancer, like neuro-oncologists and so on, take a lot of pains to say there's not a 100% confirmed causation. And they're doing that because they're doctors, they're experts. They don't want to say something is confirmed unless they're 100% sure. So we can note that. But while we're noting that, entirely to be fair, that's from the experts, we also have to note glioblastoma is incredibly rare. It's not like diabetes or something or some other widespread condition.
No, and it's something we've talked about in the past too with these kinds of class action lawsuits, you know, even about you know, the dark waters scenario, you know, with the stuff that's on the nonstick pans. It is difficult to prove unequivocally that any of these kinds of substances are 100% responsible for someone's cancer, because there are so many other factors to take into consideration, you know?
Yes.
But this glioblastoma stuff, it has an incidence or a frequency rate of only 3.21 per 100,000 people. Like,
so is that, does that help the case or hurt the case? I think it helps. It helps the case. Yes, exactly. Because, you know, if it was a more general cancer that was more widely contracted, that would be more of a needle in the haystack kind of situation. Because this is such a narrowed focus, you know, in terms of like what the fallout might have been, you know, the consequences rather, then it's a little easier to suggest causation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just so, like, I mean, it'd be different if everybody was dying of some disease called, like, baseball mitt hand. You know what I mean? Like, that would be kind of easy to trace. But here you can see there's a lot of coincidence, right? As a matter of fact, I think we're being quite diplomatic and deferring to the experts when we say this is not 100% proven. But the stuff we're getting into next will probably affect the way you think about playgrounds in your neighborhood.
Oh, for sure. I just want to make the point. This is an estimate, but there are around 1,200 Major League Baseball players at any given time. Okay? 1,200. How many people live in the United States, guys?
More than 330 million.
Yeah.
Very small sample set, right? And that group of 1,200 people, they do a lot of the same stuff. They do some things that normal people don't do because of their job, right? Like, yeah. who's most likely to have a space-related injury? Astronauts. You know what I mean? That's like, who's most likely to encounter the dangerous effects of synthetic turf? The people who are around it the most often, you know? And so all of this turf, this is the part where we have to introduce another recurring villain on the show. All of this turf is made with PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances.
Forever chemicals.
Forever chemicals.
See, why buy 12 or 14 other episodes we've done.
Why buy a diamond? Why buy a diamond? Get her something that'll last. Get her PFAS.
Exactly.
I'm kidding. She already has it.
It's already in her blood, just like yours.
Yeah, some of these turfs are still made with recycled tires, which means they contain all the nasty stuff that is bad for you, but great for a long-lasting tire. And as a result, a growing number of communities and even states in the U.S. have banned these specific types of turf or said, hey, we should think about banning these. And even the testing of multiple artificial fields, the newer ones, the older ones, across the board, they found that they're still a pretty high and dangerous presence of PFAS compounds, no matter which one you look into. And shout out to the Inquirer again over in Philly.
And just one thing I want to point out here. We talked about how the EPA in 2009 took a look at this artificial turf and said, hey, guys, all those concentrations of those things you're worried about, they're way below what we would call levels of concern. So we're good to go on the turf. There was a watchdog nonprofit called Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. And right after the EPA released those findings in 2009, they said, hey, guys, you haven't thought about the temperature.
It's a good point. I mean, listen, look, let's just say that we don't want to besmirch the good name of the EPA, but it does seem like sometimes these allowable levels, these tolerances that end up becoming codified by them are just convenient enough for big business. Just putting that out there.
Yeah. Like, we can't keep all the rat poop out of cereal. What's a reasonable amount? That's still one of my favorite things. And this, you know, again, not to denigrate the EPA, the individuals working there are brilliant people who are doing their best. We're talking about a systemic problem with corruption in the EPA.
That's right. Yeah. The ones that are the regulators that are actually, you know, the researchers, the regulators, the folks that are working there day to day, not the folks that we're thumbing our noses at a little bit. It's the higher ups. It's the folks that like create, pass the laws that ultimately kind of stymie the EPA from actually doing important work.
Yeah. But guys, I'm so sorry to just keep going back at this, but the artificial turf testing the EPA did was so underwhelming, let's say, because we're talking about these forever chemicals that exist in these grasses, right, in these fibers. And then you've got the sun that's beating down on them all day if you're not inside an astrodome. And when that sun hits these artificial chemicals, it gets surface temperatures of up to 150 degrees Fahrenheit, which means you've got plastics and these carbons that are just getting superheated.
Being released, right? Into the air, I would imagine.
Well, yeah. And then you've got players running around on them with cleats. Nothing's going to happen. Nosediving
into them. No, yeah, you're right. Yeah. So they're roughing them up with their cleats. They're already in a state of kind of heated. You know, let's just say they're being almost what's the word I'm looking for? Activated, right? And then they're getting roughed up with these cleats. People are diving into them face first. I'm sure this stuff has. I mean, even just the layman like us would be like, "What's the deal with that? Why aren't they testing for these situations?"
Yeah, and add to that, the EPA recently revised its health advisory for at least one of these things, PFOS, perfluorooctane sulfonic acid, and they said, okay, we looked back into it, and no level of exposure to this stuff is safe, at least in drinking water. 0% is good. And one of the reasons we keep shouting out the Inquirer over in Philly is because they obtained pieces of the Philly's artificial turf, and they took it to not one, but two labs and found it contained 16 types of PFAs or PFAS, including the stuff that the EPA said should absolutely not be around.
Am I the only one that when we talk about PFAs, I think of PF Chang's? Just putting that out there.
I think that might be you, dude.
Okay.
Well, we're getting close to lunchtime as
guess
well.
Guess I just want some dynamite shrimp, boys. Yeah.
I am very hungry.
Let's take a snack break. Snack with us, folks. We'll be right back and get into probably the most disturbing part of this tale.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've returned. So this is a bit like forensic work. Again, we can't 100% prove exposure caused these cancers, but we can place the victims in direct, repeated contact with substances that are proven to cause these conditions. PFAs, bad news. Corporations spent a lot of time and effort matrix dodging this issue in the past. And in the present day, these forever chemicals, they don't break down. They're around, and they cannot wait to help you get cancer, birth defects, liver problems, kidney disease. They're waiting for you. And they get inside you pretty easily. It's not vampire rules. You don't have to invite them in. They can be inhaled, ingested. They can be absorbed through the skin, especially through a scrape or an open wound, say on a baseball field.
Yeah.
Or a soccer field.
Or a playground.
Dude, did you see the NBC reporting from 2014 about artificial turf and soccer players, specifically goalies, who were constantly, you know, jumping, right, and landing on the ground as they're attempting to stop balls from getting in the goal? Oh, my God, you guys. So many young female players ended up getting types of leukemia, types of cancers, and there were so many goalies. You got to check out the reporting out of NBC from 2014 if you haven't read that yet. It's called How Safe is the Artificial Turf Your Child Plays On?
Yeah. And again, these headlines are speaking volumes, right? The Phillies played on this turf between 1971 to 2003. The six people who died in their 40s or their 50s. Additionally, glioblastoma, the median age for that is 64. So they're dying at about three times the rate of the adult male general population. Medical experts will acknowledge the pieces are all there, but they stop short of a full confirmation. They say, you know, and this is fair, they say other factors may have played a role, lifestyle choices, right? Temperature, concussions, things like that. But long story short, doesn't look good, doesn't stop in Philly, is super popular for a long time. There needs to be a lot more research. Recommendations include things like hiring epidemiologists. Let's get some statisticians in there. Or maybe, hey, we should start a registry of players along with their causes of death. And the fact that there's not something like that already is pretty weird. It reminds me of the time we learned that the FBI just doesn't bother keeping a list of people who disappear in national parks.
I have a question. We talked about this briefly, I think, on the Strange News segment, but like, you know, when someone dies of lung cancer and they were a smoker, they can, the determination could be made that smoking may have been a contributing factor, but you can't exactly say, yes, smoking is definitely what killed this person.
It would be tough. It would be tough because that person, unless they were in a controlled environment for the entirety of their life, they would inevitably run into other things that could be carcinogenic at some point, especially in the U.S.
If they drove a car and existed outside. Ever. Well,
yeah. And again, like we have this research, but we don't know exactly how much exposure is too much. Is one time too much?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Is it one season?
Is it 10 times? Is it one season, 1 year of relatively regular exposure? They don't have those answers. Nobody does, to my understanding, at least. I just wanted to see if that's how y'all saw it as well.
Well, I am curious. There might be a group that low-key does have the answers. We have to talk about the implications. Hashtag no Dennis Reynolds. Didn't know he's going to show up so much of the show, but hashtag not that kind of implication. So the turf was made from old tires, solve a pre-existing problem. Moving the tires from one place to another doesn't solve the original problem with the tires. It just sort of kicks it into another neighborhood. And we found a group that we wanted to talk about a little bit today called the Synthetic Turf Council. They are the biggest trade group representing AstroTurf, synthetic turf in general. And there's a...
We're talking lobbyists, right?
Yeah, or trade association, industry group, whatever phrase you want to hang it on. They're
advocates.
They're the turf gang.
The turf and, boys. Turf gang. I like that. Mm-hmm.
So turf gang is in this intense rivalry between proponents of natural grass in these applications. And you can go to their website right now. We got under the hood. I'm very curious. I want to be fully transparent here. I'm very curious what their members only information is because they have a free public facing side of the site. And then for like a little less than $100, they'll give you the fresh scoop.
I'm going in. Yeah, I'm mulling this thing. Wow. Let's go.
Let's go. Wide open, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I might hang out with Larry Ridgway, the VC over there. What's up? Mm-hmm. What's up, Larry? We're going to hang on your members only area.
Yeah. Do they have a Patreon? Anyway, so the STC, Synthetic Turf Council, has a lot of information on their public side of the site. You can see cool cross sections of how modern synthetic turf is made. You can read reports about their team answering basic questions. You can find a couple of statistics, but you won't find on the public side of the site much research about the possible health dangers of AstroTurf.
No, it's not in their interest to talk about any of that stuff.
That's not in their purview. We're here to flag wave, and we're the boosters for this stuff. Let's pay no attention to all of that data.
Well, but look, like, really, on the surface, the synthetic surface, guys, like that person Larry that I mentioned, and Larry, I'm sorry for calling you out. Your face and name is on the front of the about page.
I thought you were going to say your face and name offend me.
No, not at all. I'm sure Larry's an awesome person. It's just, I'm sure. Larry is the president and CEO of a couple of companies. One is called Precision Jet. One's called Turf Bond. Precision Jet started back in 2001, and what they do is they create the graphics that go on top of synthetic fields, right? So right, like, if you've got a football team or whatever, they'll get that
put
going
the logo
for you.
On.
Yeah, and they developed technology back in 2001 to do this kind of stuff and to make precision cutting. I believe they use, I think it was water and like sand or something that they use.
Not lasers? Damn it.
No. But he also works with Turf Bond, which is the like biggest artificial turf adhesive that exists out there. And why would, you know, a group that runs companies like that, that are all based on the business of artificial turf, ever want anybody to hear about the potentially bad things that this stuff can cause?
Yeah. Another way to think about it, you go to like the Domino's Pizza website, you're not going to see a warning right on the front page of the website about how too much pizza is bad.
Yeah, man.
You know, they're not going to pump your brakes once you got to the website.
And nobody out pizzas the hut. I mean, come on.
Well, it's true. Little Caesars has entered the chat. They're making crazy bread. Oh, my God. All right. So, not worth it.
It's always worth it. Always.
Okay. Well, maybe this will be worth it. We know we're going a little long today, but we wanted to bring this story to bear. Wanted to give it more attention. Again, not 100% proven, but there's one last part that stuck with me, and I think it stuck with all of us, and probably stuck with some of us listening along at home. With all the news about cancer coming from artificial turf that was made from reused and scrapped tires, what should we think about the tires currently in use? The tires on your car, the tires on your bike, the tires on the countless vehicles rolling all across your community today, just like a baseball player sliding on turf. Those tires are sliding on asphalt, right?
Yeah. Didn't we do, oh man, there's something pinging here, Ben. We talked about a new type of tire that was completely different. It was not based on rubber like that. It was, I think it was stuff of genius. Maybe it was stuff of the future, but it was a tire that just, I've got an image in my mind. It's like a future tire.
Oh, where
it's
like segmented?
Yes. And it wasn't made out of the same substances.
There are a couple different things like that. Segmented tires would be one. I guess we could all get tank tracks on our vehicles, right? And just be prepared to go a little slower. But how do you change that whole industry? Noel, that's something you had mentioned too. Like how?
Well, tires are made of what? Petroleum? You know, I mean, it's all part of the same supply chain, that legacy supply chain, that it does not behoove, you know, the old guard to support changing.
It's not even an old guard question. What I'm getting at is the entirety of, like, you're right about the petroleum, the enormity of change, the cost that would have to occur, ripping up all the artificial turf all across the United States, even if it's a thing that should be done. It's going to be difficult to do it, and it's not, if this exposure stuff is true, it's not going to undo the consequences from the past decades. It's just going to hopefully prevent further consequences. I don't know. And, you know, it's not like turf is the only origin point of this stuff, but it makes you think. I'm hearing tires outside of where I record right now. I'm going to take a walk after this. I got to go get some lunch. I don't know, man.
You go to P.F. Chang's?
I don't know, but now we don't have a P.F. Chang's that's convenient.
No, there's one right by me, guys.
Lucky you.
Come on up here.
We can go to the airport.
We can go to the airport.
I love that the P.F. Chang's at the airport serves breakfast. That's like a non-P.F. yeah, Chang thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just for you, yeah, Hartsfield. Exactly. And we want to end this episode asking, how far does this go? Folks, we'd love to hear your take on the issue, the implications, and we'd love to hear other examples of seemingly innocuous things with a dangerous, potentially fatal dark side. Or have you found research that totally disproves these concerns about turf? Honestly, if that's the case, would love to read it. Make, I think, everybody feel a little bit better.
Yeah, you can send it to us and through several means on the internet. You can find us at Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, do you like to call people and talk to them on your phone? Well, call us. Talk to us. Call 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail system. Leave a message. You've got 3 minutes. Please give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your voice and message on the air. If you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.